Asian Star 101.6 FM, Friday morning at 10 minutes past 8. Gary Sandu playing and Galan Sachia. Our mask competition continues. It is by text only now, if you please. Which of these mask products changed its packaging to the word Believe on the front as part of the 2006 FIFA World Cup? Was it A, Mars, B, Galaxy, or C, Milky Way? Text your name, your postcode, and your answer to 07902 867 857. The reason we are by text only
Star 101
is because we have with us this morning the one and only Right Honourable Fiona McTaggart. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you and all your listeners.
Thank you very much. How are you today?
Oh, I'm bearing up. I can't be more excited than that.
It's been a busy morning, isn't it?
Well, it's just been a tough month.
Yes.
You know, it started with the death of my colleague Joe Cox, then spent a lot of time campaigning on the European referendum, and I was really sad about the result in Slough. I think it was partly, actually, because normally when we have votes in this town, I get a chance to talk to lots of people on the doorstep, and because there weren't as many volunteers as I would have wanted, actually most of what I did was delivering leaflets to people.
Yeah.
I had a few sort of community coffee mornings, but I think when I actually did speak to people, they were really confused about what was going on.
I spoke to a lot of people who were confused. A lot of people thought we were voting about immigration, which is an issue, but not the issue. A lot of people thought, I don't know what to do, so I'll vote Leave. Mm. And I think it has been I mean, 52-48 is not a big margin at all by any stretch, but I think a lot of people were just, as you say, confused.
Yeah, I think also a lot of politicians were telling lies. And I think, I mean, although the media says that politicians are liars, I think on the whole in Britain we haven't usually been. And because there were so many lies about it, in a way people felt that they could just decide what they wanted to believe rather than feeling any confidence in evidence. When I did community coffee mornings about this, I said to everyone, look, don't look at any of the campaign websites for your facts. Look at things like Full Facts or any of the kind of independent, not on, you know, moneysavingexpert.com, all those kind of websites, which didn't take a view, but which told the truth. Because I think that we'd got to a point where hyperbole had been used instead of facts. Mm. And I don't think that you can make good decisions if people are just making up facts.
We were just mentioning a moment ago before we came on air, before the referendum, we were the fifth biggest economy in the world. The referendum was a week ago. The results announced last Friday. We're now the sixth.
That's within a week. That's right. We're sliding in a scary way. And I mean, the thing that actually makes me particularly angry is that people in the Leave campaign who knew that this would happen said that those of us who kind of gave evidence of companies who thought that they'd leave, you know, there's certainly one company which had agreed a new site in Slough and which said, we're not going to sign the contract until after the 23rd of June, and if Britain votes Leave, we won't sign at all.
I was going to ask you about that, obviously, because Slough has the biggest trading estate, certainly in Europe, doesn't it? How is this going to affect the area of Slough? Are companies that are in Slough, national companies that are in Slough, are they possibly, I mean, you can't answer because you're not a fortune teller, but are they possibly going to look to relocate? Is it going to make Slough less attractive to new businesses now?
Well, it's interesting. The companies who I've spoken to at the moment are trying to reassure their employees and their customers that they're not running away straight away. But Slough has more European headquarters of multinational companies than Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland put together than most European countries have. And the reason for that is because of our fantastic connectivity with the motorways and with Heathrow, and because we use the English language. And the problem is that those companies which are here because we're part of the European Union can't have their European headquarters outside the European single market. And at the moment, we have no idea about whether we have any role in the European single market in the future. So the company's international boards, not their British boards, but their international boards will be saying, we've got to move our headquarters. So I think we'll see companies that don't want to leave Britain, that have talented staff here, that are boosting our local economy, and they won't do it straight away. We'll see them, though, going to other European countries.
Going back, if we may, to the terrible assassination of Joe Cox. Now, I was out at the time, and a news alert flashed up on my phone. It's just not something you expect to happen, is it, in this country?
No, you don't. And it's heartbreaking. She was a bright talent. She hadn't been in Parliament very long, just over a year. And she was clearly a star. She'd already played a really significant role in persuading the government through kind of determined doggedness, which unfortunately is a way that too often people in my party have to use to get change at the moment. But anyway, she had persuaded them to do something. At the moment, it's still on paper, for lone children who are wandering around Europe at the mercy of sexual exploitation and people trafficking, who fled Syria and who don't know where their families are and who are at risk. And she managed to build a big enough alliance to get the government to agree to accept a substantial proportion of these children. And, you know, I just think that she managed to make a difference in only a year. And in opposition in Parliament, that's a relatively rare thing.
Yes. Just changing the subject now, if we may, to the Labour Party. Nationally, the party is perhaps, following the EU referendum, the party is perhaps in crisis, because 172 Labour MPs have voted they have no confidence in Jeremy Corbyn. 40 have voted that they do. So therefore, 81% of MPs have no confidence in the leadership of the Labour Party. What does that actually mean in just simple terms? What does that mean for the future of the Labour Party? Can Jeremy remain as leader? Do you perhaps now look for the new leadership? I mean, Angela Eagle did say that she would stand against, but then she didn't announce yesterday, did she?
Well, I think that what Angela is hoping is that Jeremy will do what he ought to do, which is actually what our local council leader here in Slough did. When there were members of Slough Council who were proposing to move a motion of no confidence in him, Rob stood down. He stood down before they'd actually voted on it. And I find it strange that Jeremy hasn't, because you can't lead. This is a parliament, you know, the Labour Party was set up to make the voice of working people heard in parliament. And if 8 out of 10 of those in parliament, including people like Margaret Beckett, who's been an MP since the 1970s and never rebelled against the leadership of our party, who nominated Jeremy Corbyn, if people like that are saying that you should go, then frankly you should go. And stubbornly hanging on is foolish.
I've not met Jeremy, but I mean, he does come across as a very nice man. However, I mean, he has this idea, doesn't he, of making politics a nicer place. As you say, though, the Labour Party has to represent its members. It has to hold the government to account in its present position as the opposition. And Jeremy needs to have the party behind him, doesn't he, which he doesn't appear to have.
Well, the most important thing for the Labour Party is not to represent our members, but to represent the people who elected us.
Yes.
Because the problem at the moment is we have a government which is committed to austerity, which is envisioning, and, you know, I've seen messages from Conservative MPs saying, right, now we've left, we should get rid of all the workers' protections that the European Union provides, like the Working Time Directive, like the right to maternity leave and paid holidays and so on. We should get rid of all this red tape, they call it, and give business the freedom to do whatever it wants. Well, the consequence of that is that what they're trying to achieve is a society of exploitation. And the people who can prevent that are Labour MPs. And, you know, I think that the reason why we have felt that our leadership isn't good enough is because we are very concerned about protecting the people who've elected us.
Which is very important. Fiona McTaggart, the Right Honourable MP for Slough, with us this morning. We'll be back with her after we catch up with the travel.
The latest news, information, weather and traffic and travel on the Asian Star 101.6 FM Breakfast Show.
Ladies and gentlemen,
the music player.
Broadcasting from the centre of Slough, this is Asian Star 101.6 FM.
This is a journey.
What we're going to do right here is go back.
Online, around the world, asianstar1016.co.uk, streaming live.
Good morning, Friday morning, Friday the 1st of July 2016. We've got with us the Right Honourable Fiona McTaggart, the Labour MP for Slough. Now, Fiona, you spoke at the AGM of ABC to Read. Tell us about ABC to Read.
It's a charity which I kind of helped to found. The initiative was by the then Labour MP for Reading, Martin Salter, which is about helping children who are not getting on well with reading in school simply by having a trained volunteer who can one-to-one give them support with their reading. And ABC stands for Assisting Berkshire Children to Read. And it's a great charity. And one of the reasons why I'm really glad to have the opportunity to talk about it here on the radio is that there are lots of children in Slough who could really do with a volunteer. And there aren't very many volunteers in Slough. So if there's anyone listening who likes to read and who likes children, get in touch with ABC to Read. They've got a website. And just say, you know, could I help? Could I be involved? Because it's a lovely role. When I was a classroom teacher, I remember the reading lady used to come in. And the children who read with her, their eyes would light up. Because very often it was the only kind of one-to-one adult relationship that they had that was kind of supportive of their learning. And it's a very special thing to be able to do.
The thing with reading is, I mean, some children just take to it, some take longer, don't they? But it is a wonderful asset to have.
Oh,
and it's a great hamperment if you don't have it.
Absolutely. I mean, I say often to older children that I did English at university, and that means that your job is reading books for 3 years.
Yeah.
It was my idea of heaven. And I think the government at the moment, which is a bit obsessed by a thing called synthetic phonics as the way for children to learn to read. And actually, synthetic phonics is a very effective teaching strategy, but it's not the only one, because there are children who kind of shoot past that and who just love the stories and who can work it out because they love the stories. And there are other children who find it more of a struggle. And I just think we need to find every way we can to help children get this. It's like a key to a door, being able to read.
Mm.
You know, you unlock a world. And that's why I'm a strong supporter of this charity. And I hope that we'll be able to recruit a few more volunteers here in Slough.
If you are able to read and you like children, please do get in touch with ABC. Just Google them. You'll be able to find them. Find their website and you could make a difference to a child or even a group of children's lives.
The Time is brought to you by STA Electrical.
That's your Euro 2016 update. If you missed it, we will do it again for you just after nine this morning. But now we move back to the Right Honourable Fiona McTaggart. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us this morning. Now, we've just spoken about ABC. Also, you've been tackling some local issues this month, meeting with the Chief Executive of the Council, specifically the Greener World site on Farnham Road.
Yes, this was a real potential dangerous problem for our town.
Because it's right next to the railway track as
Absolutely.
Well, isn't it?
It's right next to the railway track. It's right next to really important data centres, which, you know, hold on to data for you and me. And if it had, what had happened is that the refuse that had been being delivered there wasn't then going into recycling or landfill or anything. It was just stacking up. And it created a real fire risk because people didn't really know everything that was there, and some of the material was rotting and getting hot, that there was also a risk of the building sort of sliding down into the railway behind it.
Because if you walk past, you can actually see where the rubbish was stacked so high inside. The building is slightly buckling, isn't it?
Yeah.
So
and
it's something that needed doing, isn't
absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And the Environment Agency, which is the regulatory body for this kind of refuse, was not really being, to start with, very effective. And the fire service locally was very anxious, the council was anxious, and so on. The council put up notices to inform delivery lorries that the site was closed. Mm. I mean, the Environment Agency had closed the site,
yes,
but hadn't put any notices up, as a result of which more
rubbish was still turning
in.
But no one was there then to receive it.
That's true. And actually, after I kind of put pressure on the Environment Agency, spoke to some of its board members and so on, and they eventually agreed to properly clear the site, which they've done now, or I think they're just finishing it. Last time I went past, certainly that huge heap of spoil had, you know, enormously shrunk. And the potential risk has been taken away, which is a relief. But actually, you know what it makes me think? There are a whole load of people who are not very responsible, who are in this business of waste disposal. It can be very
profitable. You do hear that a lot, don't you? Like, unlicensed,
yeah, exactly,
as well.
Yeah,
I'm not saying these people were, obviously.
They were licensed. But even in the licensed trade, there are a whole load of people who are operating in a slightly marginal way, which this site obviously was. And it's my view that, just like we say to people, you can't sell holidays unless you're ABTA registered so that people can be protected. I think we need refuse companies to put up some kind of a bond, some kind of insurance scheme, so that if something like this happens, which costs us, the taxpayer, thousands of pounds to clear up, that there is actually a pot of money that we can draw down in order to do it. And, you know, I suggested this to the government, who say, oh gosh, that's another burden on business. But frankly, the way some of these businesses operated, we should have some burdens so that the rest of us are protected and we don't have to pay to clean up, in this case, quite literally, their mess.
That's the thing, isn't it? The government has limited finances. Money that has been spent on this is now not available for other things. So
exactly.
Therefore, as it was being run as a commercial business, should it not be the commercial business perhaps that is responsible, or the industry is responsible for things like this?
That's what I believe. And I think, therefore, in order to operate this kind of a refuse centre, you actually need a licence. And it seems,
yes,
to me that what the government ought to do is to say that in order to acquire a licence, you have to put up a bond which would fund this kind of cleanup.
Mm.
If, you know, and I know no company intends to get into this kind of a mess. I'm sure that it was accidental. I've met the guy who ran Greener,
yeah,
World, and I don't think he was, you know, intending for this to happen, but it happened. And if initially there had been a bond put up, then we could have drawn down on that money to clean up the site and not use taxpayers' money, and that would have been a sensible thing to do.
Yes. Now, policing. You've also met with the new Borough Police Commander, that's Gavin Wong, discussing priorities and issues for all the constituents, the residents of Slough, including a visible, that's the word I'm after, isn't it?
Yeah.
Visible neighbourhood police presence.
Yep. Gavin has taken over as Slough's police commander, and I think that's a good thing. I think, you know, he started his career in Slough, he understands Slough, and one of our difficulties sometimes is having police chiefs who kind of arrive from other places in Thames Valley, which are nothing like Slough,
mm,
and therefore don't kind of get what we need to do to make our neighbourhoods safer than elsewhere. And we've done a good job recently, you know, in the last few years on that. Slough has less crime than Reading and Oxford. And it didn't used to. And it's not been straightforward getting those kind of improvements. But one of the things that's very worrying is that the government's cut to policing is likely to reduce the number of police on the streets. And when I was first elected in 1997, people used to say to me, Fiona, we never see a police officer. We just see them going nino, nino past in cars.
Yeah.
And I never see one on the street. And actually, during the time of the Labour government, that changed. And people used to say things like, to start with, I only see them in the centre of town. And then, well, there's some in the centre of Sippenham as well as the centre of town, but not in my street. Mm. And actually, we got to a stage where, partly because of community support officers, people were more used to seeing police.
Yeah.
And we had police who kind of knew who the scallywags were. And that actually helped.
That's important, isn't it? Local knowledge is important, because if you can see the scallywags, let's say, if you can see, you know, that they're about, you can just show your presence and perhaps you've prevented a crime from happening just by doing that.
Absolutely.
One of the main issues, of course, in the area, though, has been burglaries targeting Asian gold.
Yes, I don't know that it's a problem at the moment. I think there's a risk because we're hitting the wedding season.
Yes.
And that's the time when people have their gold at home and not in the safe deposit box or whatever. Mm. We managed in Slough to develop a couple of years ago, when there was a horrible spate of these burglaries, to develop really quite an effective way of targeting and catching the gangs who are responsible. And what I just wanted to say to Gavin is that we need to make sure that we don't forget that strategy,
yeah,
that we don't slip back into a situation where people are... I mean, actually, one of the things that's better now is that there are available safety deposit boxes which are open quite late at night,
yeah,
in the town, which there didn't used to be a couple of years ago. But nevertheless, people will, you know, you go to a wedding and you will bring your jewellery back home after the wedding, and
yeah,
you won't take it to the bank until the next day.
So, yeah.
And the burglars were finding out when the weddings were and were targeting the people who were there. So, you know, I was just hoping that he would focus on that. But I'm still very worried that the government cuts to policing will mean that we get fewer police on our streets.
Story locally as well. Thankfully, it's the attempted kidnapping story, isn't it? The man who's been sentenced to 9 years in Burnham. That's a localish story for us here. But obviously, like, that's another item, isn't it, for the police. Sexual exploitation, sexual violence must be a clear priority in their work.
I've always believed that. And that was one of the messages that I gave to Gavin, that a community where women feel at risk,
yes,
of exploitation, where women feel their daughters might be at risk, is never a happy community.
Everyone has the right to feel safe, don't they,
exactly,
in their community?
Exactly.
Whether you're male, female, young, old, you have the right to feel safe.
No, you do. And the problem is that I think... the increase in kind of sexual exploitation, sex-based crimes, things like grooming of young women by men who pretend they're boyfriends, who say, oh, look, here, I've got a nice new phone, or here's some perfume, or something like that. I want to be your boyfriend. And they... You know, young girls think that that's what's going on. And actually, this is a kind of criminal way of trying to beguile them into a sexual relationship, which is quite exploitative and very inappropriate. And one of the things we have to do, as well as catch the people like that ghastly guy in Burnham who,
yes,
was caught, thank goodness, is also catch those who are using rather more subtle techniques, not actually grabbing
a woman
in the park,
pretty blatant, isn't
but
it?
Actually saying, oh, you know, I want to be your friend, to young women who are impressed by
that is
a mature boyfriend,
isn't it?
And really, one of the things that I was doing was talking to him about ways of helping to protect those women.
Back with Fiona in just a moment. Time for your travel updates.
The latest news, information, weather and traffic and travel on the Asian Star 101.6 FM Breakfast Show.
Oh my God!
Asian Star 101.6 FM, now online and streaming worldwide at asianstar1016.co.uk and on 101.6 FM. The Asian Star Revolution has started, and you're part of it.
I was too fast, Asian Star 101.6, 9 minutes to nine this morning. Last chance to get into our competition. Which of these Mars products changes packaging to believe as part of the 2006 FIFA World Cup? A, Mars. B, Galaxy. C, Milky Way. We'll do the draw for you after nine. Text in an answer, 07902 867 857 with your name, your postcode and your answer. We've still got our MP with us. Fiona McTaggart is here. Now, this week you've been joining Slough's Creative Academy for their showcase evening. Tell us a little bit about that.
The Creative Academy is an extraordinary thing. It's a dance degree run by Slough Borough Council. Now, you know, you don't really expect that.
No.
You think borough councils will empty your bins and things like that. But actually, the Creative Academy runs a really excellent dance programme. And I saw their kind of final show, which they did up at, in London at Sadler's Wells, because they're so good they can get to Sadler's Wells,
that's
one of the greatest dance theatres. And I think I was talking to the lad who kind of leads the academy, and they, I think all their graduates have got jobs in dance. And I really think that that kind of, Britain is great at creative things, and we need to celebrate when people get the quality and the skills, which means that they can make a career of something as creative as dance.
The thing is, some people are academic and some people excel in the arts, don't they? And there is a difference. This gives people who perhaps aren't as academically gifted an opportunity to explore their artistic side.
Yeah, my view is actually that we need to offer both.
And yes.
I think there's a reason.
Oh, no, I'm not saying one should supersede the other.
I understand that. Yeah. I think there's a reason why Britain has more Nobel Prizes per head than any other comparable country. And it's because we have both excellent creative education and excellent scientific education. It's the combination of those things which actually means that we can be great inventors, great scientists, you know, world-changing ones, and not just stuffing people with facts.
No. That's the thing, you don't just want someone that can recite facts, do you? You know, someone that sits here, reads something and then regurgitates exactly what they read. You need to be able to take things on and express them, whether that is academic, whether it's arty. You need to be able to put your own touch on things, don't
exactly.
you?
Exactly. And I think that the best of British education has meant we could do that. And I'm sad that in some ways the way that schools are being pressed by the government is moving away from that.
We've discussed a lot today. What are you up to then this weekend?
Well, this afternoon I'll be doing my usual advice surgeries, one up in Britwell and one down in Charvey. And then I'm going to an iftar tonight so I can say Ramadan Mubarak to some of my constituents. But over the weekend, I hope that I'm going to be able to help Slough Food Bank, who are doing a collection in Tesco.
Right.
And I just say to anyone who's
That's the Bath Road, Slough, Tesco.
Yeah, the great big Tesco. And I just say to anyone who's going shopping there this weekend, get one of the leaflets that volunteers will be handing out as you go in, because they tell you what the food bank actually needs. Now, I think it's terrible that there are people in Slough depending on a food bank. I just think my country's going backwards, but they do depend on it. And I think often people don't know what it is that people need. And one of the things I always get for the food bank is things like toiletries.
Yeah.
Because if a woman hasn't got enough money to feed her kids, it also means that she can't afford shampoo and things like that. And if she's going for a job, she'll need to be able to smarten up. And so you know, I think that's one of the things that I want to offer the people through the food bank. But have a look at the leaflet that will be given as you go in and buy one of the items on it and give it to the collectors on the way out. Because frankly, those collections are what makes the food bank work. And it's heartbreaking when you go to their distributions because you see people who are so shocked that they actually have to depend on charity in order to feed their families.
I think that's a big thing for people as well, isn't it? To actually say, I do need to depend on charity. But the sad thing is, in this day and age, the people do need to, don't they?
Yeah.
And it's nice that people have the opportunity tomorrow, if they're at Tesco, you know, people can hand out a leaflet on the way, and then you can go around and you can say, right, I'm going to buy a bottle of shampoo and donate it. I'm going to buy a tin of this. I'm going to buy a packet of this. And by doing that, you're not really adding much to your own shopping bill, maybe £1, £2, yeah, £3, but you are making a huge difference to someone else's life just by what is, to you, if you can afford it, a small donation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's shocking that we have food banks, but actually it's great that they're organised, that they've got... People can't get to the food bank just because they choose to.
Yeah.
To get to the food bank, you have to be referred by someone like a doctor or a social worker or someone who knows how poor you and your family are. You can't just... One of the ways that sometimes Conservative MPs speak about it is though people choose to use food banks. But actually, you can't. It's a requirement. And I see too many people who, for example, can't get housing benefit for the levels of rents that is charged in Slough, and therefore, just to put a roof over their heads, get into debt, and then can't feed their families. And the food bank, for too many of them, is the answer.
Fiona, I wish you all the best for that. Thanks you very much for joining us. We'll see you again next month. News at Asian Star 101.6 FM is next, then our Mars draw. Asian Star 101.6 FM.